Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to a new episode of the Passion for Technology podcast by EBV Electronic.
Welcome to the Passion for Technology podcast. Digital electronics don't exist in a virtual space. At some time and somewhere, digital electronics bridge into and with the real world. For instance, to record data such as temperatures or interact with radio waves, or to trigger actions like starting a motor. This is precisely why what mixed signal modules have been developed. They combine analog and digital functions on a single chip. Today, we'll be talking about the latest trends in mixed signal circuits with our two guests. Laurence Berger, Technical Marketing Manager at STMicroelectronics, is joining us for the first time in this podcast series. Hi, Laurence.
Hi, Mustafa.
Hi, Laurence. And Trent Butcher is Senior Product Marketing Manager at Microchip. Hi, Trent.
Hello, nice to be here. Thanks.
Trent, how would you explain what mixed signal circuits are?
So mixed signal circuits are where you have an analog circuitry and then you combine that with digital circuitry on the same chip. The reasons for doing that are really to be able to acquire or send real world signals and then interface that to a digital world where typically processing intelligence is made either from signals that are brought in from the real world or if decisions need to be made to control something on the outside world. Say you're controlling a motor, you want to send a signal out, and you're making your decisions in the digital world, that needs to be sent out to an analog world, and that needs to go that way. But on the other side, if you're acquiring signals, they need to come in from an analog circuitry and then convert it over to digital to make decisions from the information that's acquired.
Laurence, what would you say are typical applications for these mixed signal circuits?
Mixed signal circuit is useful in whatever application needs accuracy and robustness of the analog, together with versatility and computation ability of the digital. The mobile phone is certainly the application that will find an echo in everyone's mind. A mobile phone, in fact, uses plenty of mixed signal devices. The voice coding, decoding, the touch screen functionality, music restitution on speakers or headphones, the various sensors like faces recognition that are embedded, signal transmission, and so on. So this is really an application that is, for me, typically using this type of components. Also, TV set is another example that can be used for that. Because traditionally, in the past, TV sets were using mainly analog components. But with the advent of digital broadcasting, internet features, matrix of pixels versus electron beams, or hard disk drive capability, the mixed signal modules have emerged together with full digital ones. So these are really the top applications representing mixed signals. But of course, you can find mixed signals also in automotive, in buildings, and even in your connected fridge.
So what's the particular advantage of combining analog and digital functions on one chip? Trent, wouldn't it be much easier to just use two separate ICs?
So ultimately, in order to be able to acquire a signal from the real world and process it in the digital world, the analog and the digital circuitry must exist on the same chip. It's more efficient, it's more cost effective, and so being able to have that on one device makes things much simpler, not only for the circuit designer, but for the customer and everything else and the sourcing of chips and everything. So ultimately, to be able to make that acquisition and interface to the real world, either from measuring things or controlling things, that circuitry is much more efficient in terms of power, space, everything in if it's all located inside the same device. Now, there are times when some technologies cannot exist on the exact same chip, say higher voltages, maybe have a lot of extra processing that creates noise. Sometimes those can be offloaded to other chips. But eventually, no matter what, when you're creating or bringing in real world signals or controlling them, there needs to be some interface on a chip that is a mixed signal device. And so to be able to do so in the one chip makes it more cost effective and power efficient and space efficient as well.
Laurence, what new challenges are designers faced with when coming up with mixed signal circuits?
One of the very first challenges was certainly to move from bipolar technology to MOS, even if it was a long time ago. Because when MOS was developed, it was already in the 70s or the 80s. It was used in digital cells at that time. But then it opened the door to analog designers to to start developing analog blocks using MOS transistors. That was already a first challenge some time ago. And digital technology nodes, they are always shrinking to allow more integration, and also with power supply that is always reduced, now lower than 1 volt. And analog designers had to develop new techniques and new topologies to build accurate and efficient blocks with these new components under such low voltage. Another challenge would certainly be for the designers that they face, in fact, an increase of the complexity of the job itself. Some 20 years ago, a designer could develop competencies in one or two domains, but now developing mixed signal devices, in fact, requires really multi-competencies, knowledge in both domains, analog and digital, certainly with a high level of complexity. And also the tools that are used to design the mixed signal chips are more and more complex and necessitate a very good knowledge for an efficient design development.
Trent, I'd like to have a closer look at two dedicated areas and understand how they'll develop to meet new application requirements. How will EDA tools and how will foundry processes develop to meet mixed signal requirements?
So in the world of EDA tools, they need to be able to adapt to having different technologies that are integrated onto the same process and to be able to help designers understand the complexities that are present when combining these two different types of technologies, especially when it comes to making devices and chips that can measure signals accurately. It's a very complicated process, usually takes a lot of extra simulation to do it correctly and accurately, and those tools need to be developed to be able to do so in a very efficient way. When it comes to processes, because there's so many new signals that are being acquired, more and more lithographies we're seeing are having smaller and smaller dimensions. But the analog world on the silicon level, typically smaller does not help. It makes things worse, in fact, a lot of times. And so having smaller lithographies to the analog world doesn't help your signal integrity, even though on the digital side, you want to keep reducing the smaller lithographies to be able to make things cheaper, less expensive, more power efficient. And so being able to combine those two becomes difficult. Being able to have a good analog process for accurate measurements or maybe some higher voltage measurements, and being able to combine that with a efficient, cost-effective, you know, power-efficient digital process as can be difficult to do so. And so process foundries, being able to come up with a good process that works for those types of devices is important. And there's a much greater need for that to happen as the proliferation of analog acquisition is being present in more and more applications.
So mixed signal chips are a meeting of two worlds, at least to a certain degree. So what do they mean for the verification process, Laurence?
Yes, indeed, verification process is really part of the digital design development because it represents the process by which we verify that a digital circuit meets the system verification using some test benches to describe and implement the device in its environment. The verification process is built around three main topics. So ensuring that the connectivity is done correctly, ensuring or checking the functionality of the cells in the system, and making an electrical verification. So implementing analog cells in this process, in fact, requires modification of the EDA tools. Analog cells are usually simulated at transistor level, while digital cells are simulated through events and timings. So this really challenges the EDA tools to create a view of the analog cell to be understood and to be compatible with the digital verification. In this sense, there are some really specific behavioral description of the analog cells to be used in the digital verification process, yes.
How can the verification process for the analog section be rationalized, Trent?
Many engineers that are coming to this are coming from a digital background. And so they're used to being able to do digital verification with normal tools. They learned that in school and then the industry. And now they're having to learn how to do this on the analog side. It can be much trickier. Some of the simulation tools don't always capture all the complexities of being able to verify and understand how the analog world works and be able to make sure that the signal integrity is there. So the tools can help, but often there is a process of creating a design and then testing it afterwards and making sure that it works. So it can be more complicated, especially for new digital engineers, understanding how the analog world works and being able to measure that correctly. So the verification process can be a little more difficult for many of these new digital engineers, understanding how the analog world works.
Laurence, how is the semiconductor industry supporting designers in their work on mixed signal circuits?
A semiconductor manufacturer must develop very performant devices within a minimum number of design cuts and in a shorter time of design development. So collaboration with EDA tools vendor is essential to have up-to-date and suitable tools available, in fact, to us. Also, the design flow, the process is very important from the architecture down to the sales simulation and implementation. So the mixed signal verification is very important. It's a very important part of this. And also another point that is very important is that the semiconductor must provide a very dedicated technology nodes for this specific device with the adequate digital density, but also adequate analog features with a specific device working for 5 volts, for example. But not only if you need to have power on your device, then you can have a higher voltage. So really dedicated processes is also very important for us to develop these mixed signal devices.
We talked about how important mixed signal circuits are today. Trent, what role will they play in the future, and what do you think are the key drivers behind mixed signal circuit development?
I think the main driver of the mixed signal circuit development is the drive towards having sensors out in the real world and being able to understand and acquire the real world signals and bring them into the digital world. So in many applications where people are wanting to bring in these signals, such as what's the temperature, what is the pressure thing, what's the position of a device, and understand how those things are and bring them into your main processor and make decisions based on that data that's received. As the technology moves forward and progresses and become, you know, more cost effective, and the tools develop to be able to make engineers implement these solutions without having the high level engineer understanding to be able to implement them from scratch, they can take designs, reference designs, implement these higher end tools. They're more cost effective. And so it's easier to bring them in to many applications that didn't have them before. It's easier to do that. It's more cost-effective to do that. And people are seeing more and more need for these and seeing new ways to be able to bring in these signals and make decisions on it and be people being more creative with that available technology that is out there today. So the drivers being really cost-effectiveness, availability, and then people's creativity to be able to use that data in more intelligent ways.
Let's bridge, you know, from the analog to the digital, from your very personal origin stories of where your passion for technology comes from to the digital world that you've built your careers in. I'd really love to know when and how you individually developed your passion for technology. Laurence, how about we start out with you? When did you develop your individual passion for technology?
Well, let's say that I grew up in a family where technology and science were part of the discussion. I mean, in family, for sure. And my father is an electrician. He retired, but he was an electrician. And as a young girl, in fact, I used to go with him where he was working and installing, you know, electricity in offices and so on, especially when I had very free spare time during summer vacation, for example. So he was explaining me what he was doing. And also I was helping a little bit. And I liked that very much. And already at that time, he was very keen on, let's say, what we call domotic, you know, automation in houses for air conditioning, heating, for rolling shutter, security alarms, video, and so on. So really, I think I liked that very much. And then, when I went to school, I was good at math and physics, and it was very natural for me. And probably what I liked also is that when I came up to the university, in fact, I was interested in a transistor. I remember exactly the very first courses we had on electronics, you know, about the diodes, the transistors, and these nonlinears, in fact, the features that were coming in this world. So I would say it's little by little that I came into really passion for electronics and technology, all technologies.
Trent, what about the origins of your passion for technology?
So I grew up on a farm. And when living out in a farm, when things break down, you basically have to fix them yourself. And so you end up learning how things work and how to fix them yourselves. And so in that process, it creates a curiosity of how the world works, how machines work. Say your tractor doesn't work, you know, how you got to go fix it yourself many times. And so having that environment in which you can learn how the world works, learn how things work, that helps drive that curiosity. On top of that, my father was an engineer, and so he would bring these concepts home from his work, like building a computer, one of the first computers that was ever made. And so we built that at home and then, you know, worked on that. So doing those types of things helped at least create the interest for it. Maybe it's debatable whether I have the aptitude, but at least there is enough to be able to succeed in the classwork to study engineering. And so that's really where that's come from.
Very humble. Well, thank you. Thank you, Laurence, and thank you, Trent, for all the insights that you've shared with us today and also for sharing your origin stories. Dear listeners, if you'd like to get in touch with either Laurence or Trent, feel free to reach out to them via email. We're sharing their email addresses in the show notes to this episode. Please also feel free to subscribe to our podcast, Passion for Technology, on either Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of the other popular podcasting platforms. Well, thank you, Trent, and thank you, Laurence, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.